Welcome to CUTV News Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters talk to today's top thinkers from all around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas that you can put to use in your personal or professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, we dig deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. CUTV News Radio, it's the show where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Yes, Jim Masters here, and we thank you very much for joining us here live on CUTV News Radio. An honor and a pleasure to have you with us. We thank you very much for joining us here on the broadcast. Always a pleasure to have you with us, and it's important when you do tune in because you have an opportunity to learn from amazing people, amazing experts and guests that we seek out and find from all around the world, who share their experiences, their theories, their methodologies, their perspectives with us as they're working every day to make our world a better place for each and every one of us. And somebody who does that on a daily basis, and she does it with enthusiasm, vim, vigor, empathy, and does it in a way that really connects with people of all ages, especially children, is Dr. Valerie Kendall. She is in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, a certified play therapist. Dr. Valerie Kendall works with children through the medium of play, and we've been talking about it extensively on our series here on CUTV News Radio Live, and I encourage you to go back in our archives to hear the previous episodes on demand. Her website is thehealingspacecalgary.com. It is a wonderful reference. It's a wonderful tool. It's a wonderful point of contact and a brilliantly laid out website that is a great starting point for you to learn more about Dr. Valerie Kendall. We've been describing what play therapy is all about and the benefits of it quite extensively on the previous episodes of CUTV News Radio Live. Today, we're going to focus on something that is vital and that is important and is very hopeful and encouraging as well, and that is expressive arts. First, we're going to define with Dr. Kendall what the expressive arts are, and then we're going to talk about how it factors into play, because she did a two-year expressive arts certification with Natalie Rogers, who's Carl Rogers' daughter, and we're going to expand on how creative interventions can help all children, and adults too, but especially children who have been traumatized, in reaching them and connecting with them and allowing them to express and feel safe and trusted and comfortable and loved. So we're going to talk really about the expressive arts as a theme to this episode, since Dr. Kendall is such an expert in it, and she incorporates that along with improvisation and other methods into her incredible work. Specifically with children. We're excited and honored to welcome back Dr. Kendall to CUTV News Radio Live as we continue our series with her. Welcoming back psychologist Dr. Valerie Kendall. Dr. Kendall, thank you very much for joining us here on CUTV News Radio Live. We appreciate it, and it's always nice to have you with us. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure, Jim.
Oh, thank you. And I love the fact that you wanted to talk about expressive arts. And like I was saying, my whole career is based on the expressive arts. How do you define, Doctor, for our audience, what the expressive arts are?
Well, I would look at it as any way you communicate, maybe in a different way of speaking. Of course, I know on stage we might use movement and speech. But with children, often maybe they can't or don't want to speak about something that may have been traumatizing for them. And so allowing them or helping them to express how they're feeling through art work, you know, painting, drawing, coloring, sound, drumming, singing. I had a music vocal teacher who said anybody can sing, it's basically screaming. And when you think about it, we do express ourselves by crying, which is a sound making, and by screaming, which is again sounds. We can express joy through our singing. when you go to a football game or any hockey game or whatever, what do you see people doing? You see them standing up in their seats, throwing their arms in the air, so kind of a physical movement, and shouting hooray. And if you go to a hockey game in Canada, you'll see someone on the piano exciting everyone, bringing music in that way. So expressing through music, that could be drumming, that could be vocal, that could be other instruments, flute, etc. Or, as I said, movement. I didn't really get much into that. In my training as a physical education teacher, we did educational movement to music, effort actions, they were called. And each way you would move would have a certain way of showing strength or curving or straight pathway through the air, or it would have a speed factor. These were called effort actions, and they were taught by someone called Laban or Laban in Europe, and I did some training on the basis of the Laban form of art. So, I mean, even a simple thing like if you talked about wringing something, you haven't got anything in your hands, but imagine you were wringing a cloth out of something. Let's say you were angry and you wanted to get rid of some of that. Just twisting around an imaginary cloth, I don't know. Going back years, they had mangles and they would wring out clothes with their hands. So if you put that into movement, someone's doing something slowly and strongly and indirectly. In that effort action, there are the three parts: the use of space, the use of power or strength, and the use of speed. So if I was saying to a child, ring that out, or illustrating, ring it out, show me a ringing action. I wonder what sort of emotion would go with that ringing action. Show me a dabbing action. So imagine you're dabbing something. What are the qualities of that? Speed, it's quick, it's light, light, quick, and direct, dab. What if I did a slashing action? So that would be strong, it would curve through space, and it, that was the other thing, space, time, and effort. Curving through space, some amount of effort, can't remember, and some amount of strength. So in different ways of moving, you are expressing different sorts of emotions. You know, when you say to someone something like, oh, well, I'd like to wring your neck, or I'd like to wring his neck. Let's say you get mad with someone, even using vocally the term wringing, it can also be an action. So when I talk about movement and dance, you don't have to be a great dancer. I mean, people learn structured dance, let's say, jazz dance, ballet, etc., hip-hop, a certain thing. But a movement that expresses a feeling, it's just called educational dance, actually. And that's, I was fortunate enough to learn about that at Teachers Training College. Prior to that, in high school, we didn't do anything like that. I don't think it was in fashion at that time. But now it is in there. So sometimes that's a way a child can express something. And how do you feel when you're doing those sort of movements? I mean, the feeling when you do a little dab. Imagine dabbing something on your face lightly. But imagine wringing something. Imagine slashing something. Imagine punching something. What's the difference between a punching action and a dabbing action? So I saw the other day, I was at some meeting, and it was someone else's house, and there was a mother there with her child. And the child came walking in her boots. The child was only like three, quite young. And the mother said, what are you doing walking in here in your boots? You should go and take them off. You know, in Canada, with the snow and the dirty weather, it's a common thing to take your shoes off at the door when you go into someone's house. So the child's coming along, and the child actually stamps her foot at her mother. She stamps it. So here she's using a movement. It's strong, it's direct, and it's giving a message to the mother. It's saying, hey, I don't like you telling me I've got to take my shoes off. Then mum's reaction is like, don't you do that to me. Don't you stamp your foot at me. So I'm just trying to explain how movement can be expressing an emotional situation, something, how you're feeling, and how we can turn that around. We can have children move in certain ways. We can encourage them that maybe that's a way they get their emotion out, or maybe drawing. Now, Natalie Rogers herself, unfortunately, she died about 2 years ago, maybe three. She did talk about going through a divorce and doing an expressive arts journal, and that was something we were asked to do for 6 months. 15 minutes a day, whatever, 10 minutes, not a long time. Keep a journal, draw in it. Thing is, if you just want to scribble, that's what she did when she was going through that difficult time, getting out the feeling by scribbling. What color are you using? That can make a difference. We use color. We talk about people being blue. We talk about being green with envy, red with temper, yellow jaundiced as being cowardly. We link these colors to feelings. So what happens when a person say, pick whatever color you want? They pick a color. Does it mean something? Could it mean something? What if we'd used a different color? Would that make us feel different? So there's no intent to be an expert at this. It's getting something out. Imagine drumming. Drum lightly. Oh, I don't think I could make the sound. Very lightly. And then if we drum really loudly, that we can not accelerate, crescendo to a higher pitch.
Yeah.
And decrescendo. When we go into that higher pitch, what's that mean? What are we getting out? So we may just give a child instruments or paints, as well as we're giving them, you know, sand or stuff like that to play with. Which do they pick? Which do they maybe avoid? Which eventually you might want to enlarge their play selection and maybe join in with or have a conversation with a drum. You give a rhythm and they give a rhythm back, or they'd give the rhythm and you respond to it. It's a way of communication. The painting, the singing, the moving or the dancing, and when I'm talking about dancing, I'm kind of talking about that more free movement. What have I missed out? Drumming is sound, singing. I think that's kind of what I'm thinking on with creative arts. And it's creative art to build something too. You know, we have a sand tray and you're building something out of it. Even the whole idea of building sandcastles. Carl Jung, who was a proponent of depth psychology, was going through a difficult time. He's either German or Swiss, and he was a follower of Freud initially, and then they kind of had a split. And Carl Jung went through a depression, and he did use sand play, you know, near a lake where he was, building things in there. And he worked through his emotional disturbance using sand. So I'm kind of overlaying the play therapy, because the sand is really part of that. But you can do pictures in the sand too. Some children will just come and enjoy the feeling, the sensory feeling of the sand on their hands, lifting it and dropping it, lifting and dropping it, swirling it around, making letters in it. With other children, there are figurines provided for them to place in there to make a picture or a story. It's still artistic work, making a story with figurines instead of paint. So when I'm talking about expressive arts, that's the sort of thing I have in mind.
And the benefit of it, in terms of what the child is actually getting out of it, it allows them, obviously, to express. But there's a whole chain of events. There's things that are happening as they are doing this, and it could be incredibly revealing, I would imagine, that they're expressing themselves in ways through art that perhaps they're either not comfortable with or they're not able to, from skill set, to express in another way other than through the arts themselves sometimes, right? There can be some wonderful, beautiful things that you notice, especially as a psychologist, as an expert, that stand out, that come through this artistic expression.
Well, we should be aware of brain development too, particularly in regard to, let's think of trauma, memories can be affected. The what we call the implicit memory, it's excluded from explicit storage, kind of quoting from Rothschild. The individual may not have access to the context in which the emotions or the sensations arose, and as well, language is a function of explicit memory. So it's not generally accessible to trauma survivors after a distressing event. Sections of the brain that control language may be affected, making it difficult to relate a trauma narrative, but they can demonstrate through some of these artistic ways what might be happening. Well, what comes to mind, sand play, I'm thinking of a child. I think some years ago, probably he's 9 or 10, and he would have figurines in the sandbox. He'd have dinosaurs most of the time. And the dinosaurs, the herbivores, which ate grass and stuff like that, would be in conflict with the carnivores. And on a general basis, there would be this battle between the herbivores and the carnivores. And that just looks like, oh, child's just enjoying playing with dinosaurs and, you know, just looks quite a natural thing. But after a while, I'm thinking, hey, why is it always these dinosaurs? And there's two sides, the herbivores and the carnivores. And then it starts to click, oh, his parents are separated. I'm not sure, I can't remember how long they've been separated. Quite a while, maybe, because dad, in the meantime, had got a new girlfriend. So the child is playing out kind of abstractly this event that's going on in his life, that there's a difference, there's a conflictual, maybe, situation between mum and dad. And he's illustrating that theme that I can eventually pick up after a while is, or it could be, the conflict between the parents. Then he would put another character in there. After a while, I have both the dad and the boy, and they've both got a sand tray, and I'm saying, show me a day in your life, or show me what your life is like using these figurines. And so they're both doing this. And the boy puts a figure in there. It's a female figure. Oh, no, he doesn't put it in. That's the whole point. Dad does a picture of life using the sand and figurines, and he's got the woman in there. The boy has got his group. There's no woman in there. So dad's looking at the boy, and he's saying, oh, he's asking a few questions about it. I see this. Oh, let's see you. I don't see any person there, or whatever it is, or that female one. I can't remember it exactly, but the kid says to him, that's because I don't want her there. So instead of him, you know, having this conversation, I don't like this girl or whatever it is, he's able to express it when he gets a start off with sand play and making a picture out of it. And it's just as important what he leaves out as what he puts in. So it's a very clear message to dad. So that's how it can help, going back to what I was saying about trauma, that you can't necessarily put it into speech. It's an inability to verbalize, maybe. And that might be part of the human survival response. When an experience is painful to recall, the brain is protecting the individual by literally making it impossible to talk about it. And sometimes that can kind of irritate a parent. In fact, I had a bit of an emergency call this morning, and the child is not saying much. The adults, the parents are really worried because the child had a bit of an emotional outburst this morning, and they come in and they want to be involved and talk to the child, but he doesn't really want to talk to them. So, and maybe a child might be fearful of actually being very, very truthful with the parent. Sometimes it seems, anyway, from this, what was happening this morning, that there was possibly it's a power battle. And as children get older, they get into those teen years, and parents are trying to do their best to, you know, advise them, direct them. Sometimes the child will feel like it's pressure, and they are getting to an age where they want to make their own decisions, and they don't necessarily want to do what the parents are saying, even though it could be very wise what the parents are saying, like limiting the amount of time you might spend on your homework, because, you know, you need to have sleep, and so maybe telling the child, you need to put that away now. And actually what occurs is the child feels really angry inside, because maybe they were quite close to finishing, and maybe they have a perfectionistic type of nature that they want to do a really good job and get this done to take back to school. And they're being stymied at that moment by the responsible parent saying, you know, I think you've done enough of that now, let's limit the time, it's time to go to bed. But the child may obviously, you know, cares about the parents, doesn't want to upset them, so maybe dumps it inside, and it gets into a seething situation. And I was able to, I hope, demonstrate how that's like a rumbling volcano. You know, it erupts sometimes, but it could be years, it could be a few weeks, and then there's an eruption. What's been happening all the time? What's been happening in that volcano? Chemical things changing, heat developing, pressure developing. Compare that with the human body. Pressure developing, heat, anger. Till finally, it outbursts in a, you know, as I say, an outburst. And the parent's like, well, what happened? Like, what's wrong? And the child's not answering because he can't. He's kind of shut down by his anger. And maybe for a child something's traumatizing that an adult doesn't think is traumatizing at all, such as the parents impressing their will on the child and the child not feeling free to express their emotions, because one reason they might not want to upset their parents because they actually care and love for their parents. Sometimes kids will like look after their parents by swallowing their own emotions. I don't know if I answered your question.
No, you have. No, and in such a very eloquent and detailed way as well. And obviously, too, creative interventions we've been talking about in expressive arts can help anybody on the planet, but especially traumatized children, right?
Yes, that there was something happened in Europe at some time. I can't remember the exact details, but something to do with war and violence. And children observed their parents running away into the trees and being shot. And the way this was dealt with creatively was having them draw what they saw, or their impression of what they saw. And then we're moving on to a slightly different activity here. Afterwards, the therapist had them scribble through what they had drawn so that they saw this. They showed what happened through their drawing, but then they're trying to blot it out. They're trying to wipe it. They're trying to scribble it out. And that was a form of EMDR, eye movement desensitization reprocessing, that they were using. Normally, you could use eye movement or tapping on alternate sides of the body to integrate both sides of the brain to be active during that process. Or their method was using the artwork, and as you moved the pencil left and right to cross out what had happened, you're bringing in another part of the nervous system to aid that. Now, I thought, that's very good, and sometimes I will use that eye movement. Okay, let's say playing ball. One way of having someone do that eye movement is tossing a ball from your, just one person, your left hand to your right, throwing and catching, and watching the ball as it goes from one side to the other. So in a playful way, you are doing this eye movement, and maybe, if I just go to a teenage person now, maybe they were talking about school, maybe there's some bullying, maybe they're difficulty making friends. We're playing ball to relax it. Then I'll start tossing it from hand to hand. Now, one particular girl was a goalkeeper, so she was good handling a ball. So we start tossing it to catch one-handed, right-handed, left-handed to each other, communicating. And then, oh, let's try doing it from our own left and right hand and watch the ball as it travels. And so she starts doing this. And if at the same time we've just been talking about something that disturbs her, we're in a subtle way doing EMDR, but playfully, a bit not exactly as the protocol is, but very close. So I'm combining play and eye movement desensitization processing at the same time. So I'm just a couple of examples of how you can combine play with other things. I've got one or two examples that come to mind from play. If you're interested, I can think of one art one.
Yeah, we've got about maybe about 3 minutes left to the show. So, yeah.
Oh, is that all we've got?
I know. Oh, see how quick it goes when we're really getting into a good conversation. And you want to share one brief one?
Brief one. Okay, let's look at the brief one. A child that doesn't feel good about themselves, kind of has some sexual abuse happened when 3 or 4, very young. It was never revealed at that time. It was by an older child in a daycare, a day home. And my mother and I came up with the idea the child liked to do art. And so we encouraged her for making some masks. So when you hide behind the mask, you can probably do a role play or be a different person. And she made one or two masks. And then you can have, maybe you can create a dialogue between the two, maybe her mother and herself, with these masks on. Or she can put one mask on and say something, then put the other mask. And it distances the child away from a difficult topic. And it's possible to say no. Let's say the one person with the mask is being unkind or is not being a friend, and moved away a little from the sexual abuse bit. But the other person with the mask can say, no, don't do that. I don't like that. And instead of just being that small child, they're now somebody else. They're bigger and they've got more authority with this mask of being someone else. And they can work through that trauma that happened to them by being able to do a role play, which is a kind of acting, because puppetry is also a creative way of dealing with things. I mean, I've got several more, but maybe we'll just leave it at that one. Maybe.
Yeah, no. Well, I encourage folks to go to your website, as I mentioned earlier at the top of the show, because it's a great place to connect. The website is thehealingspacecalgary.com. Again, thehealingspacecalgary.com. We're talking to a wonderful expert in everything that we've talked about thus far, Dr. Valerie Kendall, a psychologist and somebody who works with children through the medium of play in so many different, very effective approaches. always a pleasure having you with us, Dr. Kendall. Hope we get a chance to explore some more, and we thank you so much for sharing all this vital and important and impactful information with us here on the show. It was an honor and a pleasure to have you with us, and look forward to chatting with you again real soon.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoyed sharing with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Take care, and you have a wonderful day and weekend coming up. And thank you for joining us as well. Again, folks, we do encourage you to connect with psychologist Dr. Valerie Kendall. If you've been really listening intently to the conversation, she really cares, and her approaches are unique and creative and results-oriented, and that's the key to it all. Go to thehealingspacecalgary.com, and she could work with folks not just obviously in Calgary, Canada, but wherever you're listening. So make contact with her. She's there to help, and she's brilliant at what she does. For all of us here, once again, Jim Masters thanking you for your time this time. Till next time, stay tuned. More great episodes of CU TV News Radio Live coming right up. We also wish all of our United States listeners a wonderful and a blessed happy Thanksgiving tomorrow as well. Take care, and bye for now.
You've been listening to CUTV News Radio. If you want to learn more about our programming or perhaps be considered for a future show, visit us on the web at www.cutvnews.com. And if you enjoyed listening to today's show, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and be sure to write a review. Thanks for listening, and from all of us at CUTV News Radio, we hope you have a productive and inspired day.